And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Thursday. We get you ready for the weekend with plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, name, image, and likeness. How it's changing recruiting in college football. Plus, Trevor Lawrence with some advice for Arch Manning. Is Arch Manning the quarterback with the most pressure on him in college football history? The Atlanta Hawks make a nice trade. Plus, the premier player to look for in basketball moving forward. More information or anecdotes or tidbits on Freddie Freeman as his agent spoke out, or now former agent. We'll get to that. Plus, Brooks Koepka speaks out about his move to the LIV Golf Tour, and a whole lot more over the next few hours. We'll look ahead to the July 4th holiday, and plenty more to do between now and 3. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Radio till 3 on this Thursday. Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing phenomenal. Last night, I got to address this immediately. Last night, I went to do the Aviator, and immediately I fell asleep within the first 10 minutes. So no movie review today, but I will get on it tonight, Luke Morrow. But I'm doing great. It's a nice Thursday here in the low country, and I'm feeling good. This Morrow Midday Show should be the best of all time, Luke Morrow.
That's not a great sell for the Aviator. It knocked you out within 10 minutes,
It knocked me out. Well, I was already tired. I got home a little late. You know, I was out having a good time. I said, you know what, let me lock down, get ready to go for the Aviator. I woke up about 4 in the morning and said, yeah, you know, I bet it was a good movie. So there you go.
There's your review.
Yeah.
Yeah. Slept through it. Figured it was pretty good.
Saw Leo. I mean, Leo was looking good, as always. That's so, right. You know, I'll get back into it tonight. I'm going to figure it out.
All right. Well, you do have time because programming, no, I will not be here tomorrow, and I won't be here all of next week. So after today, I won't be on the Morrow Midday Show for a while until July 11th. So taking a little extended summer siesta here. For the holiday and whatnot. So we got a lot to get to over the next few hours, and then I'll be off for a little while and be back with you on July 11th, 7-11. So let's get to it because we have plenty to do today in the meantime before we get ready for the holiday celebrations over the next week plus. Name, image, and likeness. I want to start with this because I saw this poll on Twitter, and, you know, it's obviously a certain demographic. It's only whoever votes in the poll. It's a certain people that see the poll. But Sports Talk Media Network, which you can hear right here on ESPN Radio each night from 6 to 8, they put out a poll earlier this week. And they said, according to reports, a Miami collective will pay a quarterback $9.5 million. A Tennessee collective will pay a quarterback $8 million. Do you think Gamecocks and Clemson collectives should engage in that type of bidding for a premier quarterback? That's the question. Because of what's happening in college football, Tennessee got a top quarterback in the country by reportedly including $8 million in name, image, likeness. Miami just got a top quarterback with the help of reportedly $9.5 million from their collective. If you're Clemson, if you're South Carolina, and you're seeing what's happening elsewhere in college football, should you engage in the same practices? And I was very surprised by these results because 80% of voters say no. 80% of what I assume would be Gamecock or Clemson fans voting in this poll said no. Those two schools should not be engaging or bidding or coming up with money, NIL deals, to get the top quarterback talent in the country. I would say yes. I think it's a clear yes. And I think this is the way that the sport is going. It's a lot like in professional sports. And I know you would want to split the two, college, professional. You may not like the idea of kids getting paid. But there is nothing worse than being a fan of a professional sports team and having a cheap owner unwilling to spend the money. The New York Mets lived through it for a long time. Now they bring in a new owner. Steve Cohen bought the team, richest owner in baseball, and they're throwing money around. And I have plenty of Mets fans, and they love it. For years, you'd always hear the rumors. Could they get this guy? Could they get that guy? They'd lowball them. They'd lowball their own free agents. They'd get guys after they were already over the hill. Never in on a lot of the big names in recent years. It's incredibly frustrating when it takes money to build a good roster and the owner's unwilling to do so. If you're a fan of the Cincinnati Reds, Kansas City Royals, Baltimore Orioles, Pittsburgh Pirates, and that's just in baseball. And if you're a fan of the Spurs, you're probably upset when you wake up this morning and see they traded your one All-Star. Right, they're tearing it down and building it back up and doing so through draft picks. In the NFL, we see it from time to time as well. Teams that are too cheap to spend on a certain player, especially a quarterback, let him go elsewhere. But Kirk Cousins, not a great quarterback, but Washington would never commit to a long-term deal. And now look at Washington since. They've been shuffling quarterbacks year after year and have had disappointing seasons year after year. Kirk Cousins isn't great. He's probably better than whatever Washington has thrown out there in recent years. Teams that are unwilling to spend money, there's nothing more frustrating for a fan than an owner, than a team that's unwilling to spend. And they have an opportunity, and they could go get a great player, the exact guy you need, and they're just unwilling to open up the pocketbook. They won't do it. They won't spend the money. Now that's creeping into college sports because of name, image, and likeness, and how much money some of these big guys are demanding. Would I offer to spend $9 million on an offensive lineman? No. Even a wide receiver? No. A defensive back? No. But when it comes to quarterback, quarterback is so important. It's the most important position. Tennessee just got a really good one. Miami just got a really good one. I assume name, image, likeness didn't play a huge role in Arch Manning. But if you could get a kid like that, right, you should be willing to pony up the type of money that would be required. And when you look at Florida specifically, this is the way that recruiting is going. It's why I think Mario Cristobal is going to do great at Miami, because he's already a good recruiter. He's shown that before. And now he's going to have the financial backing of Miami. And we just saw them steal a quarterback away from a bunch of other schools this week by, reportedly, a $9.5 million offer. Florida was one of those schools. Florida also lost out on a kid that went to Georgia. They lost a recruiting battle with somebody who went to Florida State. They lost a recruiting battle with someone who went to South Carolina. Not great for Florida to be losing to those schools, not only in terms of prestige, but also the fact that, right, South Carolina, Georgia, they're in your conference. Florida State's one of your in-state rivals. They lost out on this quarterback to Miami. People are already wondering, is Billy Napier the guy? Billy Napier had to put out a letter last week to try to tame the fires of the Florida faithful, not very happy. And then there was this quote in regards to that recruiting of that quarterback who went to Miami, in which it was stated that Florida is the most dysfunctional collective in all of college football. I plan on steering my clients away from them. From my standpoint, I never even want to deal with them again. If it weren't for the collective that's completely dysfunctional at Florida, he probably would have been there. That's in regards to the top talented quarterback that chose Miami this week, reportedly for $9.5 million. If you're not getting into the pool of name, image, and likeness, you're going to fall behind. It's the same thing I said about the transfer portal with Dabo, with Dabo's refusal to get involved in the transfer portal. You don't want to? That's fine. Others will, and that's the direction in which the sport is moving. USC is the favorite to win the Pac-12. Their quarterback transferred in. Texas has the second-best odds in the Big 12 behind Oklahoma. Both teams had their quarterbacks transfer in. Right, Pittsburgh and Wake Forest. Pittsburgh won the ACC last year. They replaced their quarterback with a transfer this year. They have the second-best odds to win the ACC behind Clemson. No transfer quarterback there. Right, Bryce Young, not a transfer quarterback. But Georgia, don't forget, last year won the national championship. The original starting quarterback transferred into Georgia. And then Stetson Bennett took him the rest of the way. And Stetson Bennett, by the way, theoretically, I mean, he went to another school, came back, yada, yada, yada. A lot of quarterbacks, obviously, Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma, a lot of top quarterbacks went through the transfer portal. And now not only transfer portal, but the top quarterbacks are making their choices, Tennessee, Miami, based off of how much money they're going to get as well. And the quarterback position is so important that you have to be able to play ball as well if you want some of these kids. South Carolina got Spencer Rattler through the transfer portal. I don't know how much name, image, likeness is involved, although I did see that photo online of him posing with like a new car. That probably doesn't hurt. It also helps to have that connection with Shane Beamer from his previous stop and Spencer Rattler needing a place to go play. But if you want top quarterback talent, you're probably going to have to open up the purse strings here moving forward in college football and spend a little bit. And I saw 80% of fans that I assume Gamecock Clemson fans said, no, we don't want to pay for quarterbacks. Now, we're above that. We don't need to pay for our quarterback talent. We don't like the direction college football is moving in. That's fine. You may not like it, but you may also fall behind because other schools are going to pay for these kids. They already are, and they're getting top-end quarterback talent. It's the way of the world when it comes to recruiting now. No longer is it necessarily just about winning a bunch of games or even having a connection with the coach. A lot of times we've heard Lane Kiffin talk about this. Right? It's free agency. They come back to you and say, hey, here's what this school offered me. What can you do? Can you best it? Can you match it? It becomes a bidding war for the top talent in college football. And we could have a conversation whether, you know, it's good or not, whether these kids should be getting $9 million coming out of high school before they even take a snap in college. But instead of sitting there complaining about it and longing for the times that were, you can also adapt and keep up with the changes to keep up with the rest of the sport as well. This is what's going to happen in college football, whether we like it or not. You're going to have to have to spend some money to get top-end talent. You know, Tennessee got that big-time quarterback. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name because I'll just butcher. I'll do a disservice to the family. But Tennessee reportedly is paying $8 million for said quarterback to come to school, getting the top quarterback, one of the top quarterbacks in the country. Here's well-known Tennessee fan Clay Travis was on the radio in, I think it was in Alabama. And Clay Travis was talking about how because of name, image, and likeness, you could see a team like Tennessee suddenly take a step forward. This is the concern with Florida. Billy Napier seems to be a good coach, but is it the right time with Florida? They need to get things together behind the scenes to apparently keep up with these collectives and name, image, and likeness. And it could help teams level the playing field. Florida may fall behind in all this. Tennessee may take a step forward, where even though Tennessee's not winning national championships, not keeping up or competing necessarily on the field or at the top of the SEC, where they are competing, keeping up, matching, or outdoing is in the offer, or the amount of money that they can offer, which allows them to steal some talent away. Here was Clay Travis talking about that, about how Tennessee is a school that really could take advantage of name, image, likeness. And nowadays, that may be the most important thing when it comes to recruiting.
Well, look, I mean, Tennessee has a lot of billionaire boosters. And I think I told you guys when the Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban blow up happened, I think on some level it's Nick Saban acknowledging that Alabama isn't as well equipped in an NIL era as schools that have tons of billionaire boosters. And so Tennessee has got a lot of really rich guys that care a lot about how well the program does. And in years past, sometimes that could be a mess to have a lot of super rich boosters because they all have big egos and they can pull in different directions. But when you just say, hey, you can get these players if you're willing to pay this amount of money, you're speaking their language because you typically don't become a billionaire without being pretty good at capitalism and understanding basic business mechanics. Now, I know some people inherit it, but the family in general certainly has to be a big capitalist family in order to become billionaires. And so I think Tennessee is well-equipped, as are Texas A&M and Texas, and probably USC. There are relatively few schools that have multiple billionaire boosters. Tennessee's one of them, and I think they've been very progressive in terms of trying to put together a collective that is going to lead to a lot of really good players coming to Tennessee that might not have looked at the balls otherwise.
Clay Travis talking about Tennessee and the advantage they could have, where you can make up that difference through name, image, and likeness. They just got a top-end quarterback. Miami as well, giving Jaden Rashada $9.5 million. Miami also this week brought in the former wide receiver from Penn State, Drew Allar, who's getting a nice NIL deal there as well. And for Clemson, South Carolina, if you don't do this, for South Carolina, it already makes it hard enough to keep up in the SEC. And for Clemson, the rest of the ACC may not be as big of a concern, but I do really like that fit of Mario Cristobal in Miami because he's already a good recruiter. He's from the area. You have that connection there. He knows the area. And now he's got the financial backing of Miami, where they were doing things illegally 20 years ago to put together one of the best college football teams we've ever had. Now they can actually do it a little more legally. They can give a quarterback $9.5 million to make sure he comes to Miami before ever taking a snap. They can pay for Drew Aller to come be his target, you know, as a wide receiver there at Miami. And Cristobal can do a good job, even for the guys he doesn't have to pay, of bringing in good talent. Miami could be building something in the ACC. And when it comes to the SEC, to schools like Florida that don't have this all together could be falling behind. A school like Tennessee, who has plenty of money to spend on these kids, could gain a real advantage. And if you're South Carolina, where are you going to fall in all that? So I saw this poll, and I was surprised. I voted in the poll. I voted yes, of course. And I'm not a Gamecock or a Clemson fan. But it's the cost of doing business nowadays. Right? If you want to compete in college football and you want to get some of this top-end talent at quarterback, which you need to go compete at the top level of the sport, you're going to have to start spending some money. You may not like it, but it's the new way of the world. You know, in the NFL, we see a lot of these defensive coaches as well kind of falling behind in this whole idea. That's why Sean McDermott's the ultimate outlier, because they went and they drafted Josh Allen, and boy, has he worked out. But a lot of the other coaches, defensive coaches, look at Ron Rivera in Washington, right? They go with Taylor Heineke. Ryan Fitzpatrick was the solution last year. Now Carson Wentz. They've never spent big on a quarterback. Before Ron Rivera was there, let Kirk Cousins walk. Speaking of Kirk Cousins, he was the guy that they went all in at Minnesota with Mike Zimmer, defensive coach. Didn't quite pan out. For the Steelers, he replaced Ben Roethlisberger with Mitch Trubisky. A lot of defensive coaches are still thinking about winning with defense and not worrying so much about the quarterback. Not going and getting that big-name quarterback. Josh Allen's really the only one. It's why the Patriots are so great, because you had Tom Brady and you had Bill Belichick. And then they replaced Tom Brady with Cam Newton. An over-the-hill, washed-up Cam Newton. And now Mac Jones as well. A lot of the defensive coaches in the NFL are struggling as well to adjust to such a modern offensive world where you need a star quarterback if you want to go win. Look around the NFL. Look at the quarterbacks that are winning. It's all the top quarterbacks in the league. You need a top quarterback. In college football, same idea. Now, how do you get one in college football? You may have to spend a little money, and that's what's required to do. And for South Carolina and Clemson, look, this is just a certain portion of the fan base voting in this. But I hope the boosters, the majority of the fans, the programs themselves realize that this is kind of the direction college football is moving in. And this is what you have to do in order to get the job done. You're going to have to spend some money to get top-end quarterback talent, and that's what it takes to go win big in college football. Coming up, speaking of top quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence had some advice for Arch Manning. We'll get to that next. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, does Arch Manning have the most pressure on him of any quarterback in college football history? He's not even in college yet. But we'll get to that coming up. Plus, Trevor Lawrence's advice for Arch Manning. Open the show, talk about name, image, and likeness, and how, much like the transfer portal, you may not like the direction college football is moving in, but you kind of have to keep up with it, or you're going to fall behind. And I saw a poll where 80%, I assume, Clemson, South Carolina fans voted that they would not want their schools to get involved bidding for top-end quarterback talent. And I think that's a mistake. I think you may change your opinion over time because that's what's going to be required for these schools to get that top quarterback talent. And we know top quarterback talent is what's required to go win big in college football. And this is now the way of the world in college football. This is what you have to do. Try to keep up with the top programs. And those who find an advantage, like Tennessee, will be able to shorten the gap between them and maybe in Alabama by getting a lot of talent this way. Miami's bringing in a lot of talent, spending money for it. We'll see if that works out. Closes the gap already between them and Clemson and the ACC. But this is what teams will do now to try to climb towards the top of college football. Already, Florida fans are very restless with Billy Napier, unhappy with the current trend and offseason here for Florida. They're losing out on recruits. I read you that quote last segment where the collective seems to be a bit of an issue with Florida. Trent, you're a Florida fan. What's the pulse of the nation right now when it comes to Billy Napier and what's going on with the Gators this offseason?
I think the fans are a little upset, Luke. You know, rightfully so right now. The recruiting hasn't gone the way that it should for the University of Florida. That's a blue blood program. You know, two national championships in the 2000s here in about 22 years or so. So this is a program that needs to be top 10 in recruiting. And if we're losing out to Florida State's and Miami's, especially in-state kids, that was the problem. Will Muschamp, when he came to Florida, couldn't recruit the in-state kids. Jim McElwain did a good job recruiting the in-state kids. Dan Mullen, it was all right. It could have been better, but that's the MO, is to get the in-state kids from South Florida, Central Florida, and bring them. And we have the money. That's my big problem with all this, Luke, is that we have Gatorade, you know, one of the biggest, you know, liquids in the entire world who can fund this NIL collective. We have the money to do so. Is it the coaching staff? Is it the collective itself that is not giving the athletes what they want? Who knows? But, yeah, I'm a little upset with Billy Napier right now. I didn't like the hire to begin with, and, you know, this certainly doesn't help. But he hasn't coached a football game yet, so let's give him the benefit of the doubt right now. And luckily, Luke, we have a good quarterback that you can surround the team with. That's the bright side of this whole thing, is we have Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, that is true. It was just over a month ago when Billy Napier said Florida will not get involved in NIL bidding wars, and that could be a mistake. So I know a lot of Florida fans are very upset right now. It's the current state of college football. This is what you have to do. And if you're Florida especially, yeah, keep that in-state talent in-state. And you can't be losing out to Florida State, Miami for these kids, which is what's been happening. Hey, speaking of top-end quarterback talent, Arch Manning, of course, made his decision to commit to Texas. I don't know if name, image, and likeness is involved in any way with Arch, because obviously the Manning family, they don't need the money. And I don't think that was a big deciding factor. Maybe he'll play some sort of role, but I don't know how much Arch Manning is going to get just to go to Texas. With his name and his popularity, I'm sure a lot of companies would love to have him work as a sponsor. I'm sure he'll have plenty of opportunities. But I also heard audio from Archie Manning, the grandfather, before the commitment, about a few weeks ago, talking about how they've handled Arch in an old-school way. He wasn't going to do a bunch of visits early on. He was not on social media until just a few weeks ago. They were not going to do all the social media stuff. They weren't interested in name, image, likeness. And they can do that because, well, they're the Mannings. And Arch Manning is a big enough name and draw, and they have plenty of money that they don't need to get into that bidding war. They can make a choice simply just out of the school that he prefers. But when it comes to Arch Manning, the hype is already, before the kid even finishes up his high school career, right? The hype is through the roof. Here is Brad Crawford, who writes for 24/7 Sports. He was on radio, The Next Round is the name of the show. And Brad was talking about expectations. What should we expect from Arch Manning that would allow him to reach those expectations? What does Arch Manning need to do at Texas in order for this to all seem like it will work out? Here is Brad.
I mean, I think to be the top-rated quarterback of all time, you know, three guys have been in that 24/7 composite, you know, top-rated player scenario, him, Vince Young, Quinn Ewers. You have to at least win a Heisman Trophy or a national championship at Texas, right? I mean, in order to meet those, you know, lofty, really outside the stratosphere expectations. Arch is a guy, obviously comes from a good family, NFL background, has all the talent in the world, but, you know, coming in as the number one player of all time at the quarterback spot, obviously expectations are pretty wild for him, and, you know, it's going to be hard to meet that, but I'm sure Steve Sarkisian at Texas coaching staff, fellas, they're going to do all they can to make sure he has the pieces around him, you know, to get it done and get the Longhorns in that Final Four picture.
That was Brad Crawford talking about Arch Manning going to Texas. Right, what should we expect? What needs to be done by Arch to make this all worthwhile? By the way, who leaves the ringer on their phone? I don't know if that was one of the hosts or if that was Brad. All right, who leaves the ringer on? My phone's on silent 90% of the time. And on Do Not Disturb quite a bit as well. Who still uses the ringer on their phone? Your phone's with you all the time. You don't need the ringer on. Vibrates just fine. That'd be asking a lot for Arch Manning to win a Heisman or bring a national championship to Texas. But when you talk about the top quarterback recruit of all time, it does seem fair. You're talking about this is the best quarterback that we've had since these recruiting services began over 20 years ago. You would like to think that he could, at minimum, win the Heisman, be the best quarterback in college football. Or because you have the best quarterback recruit historically, maybe of all time, as crazy as that sounds, he should be able to lead you to a national championship if you're Texas. Vince Young did. And at the time, Vince Young had that ultimate rating that has only been bested by Quinn Ewers, or at least matched by Quinn Ewers and now Arch Manning. Trevor Lawrence was asked about Arch Manning, and he said, quote, there's going to be a lot on his plate, but you have to show up ready to learn and grow. You're not going to be perfect from day one, but he is really talented and he has a lot of abilities. He needs to carry that confidence over while knowing you do have to start over. You have to do that at every level. It's something I'm going through right now in the NFL. So you need to realize you're there for a reason, but you have to earn that respect from your teammates. He seems like a quarterback who will do great. Seems like good advice from Trevor. And Trevor knows a thing or two about coming into a program with lofty expectations. But I don't know if anybody has had greater expectations than Arch Manning will once he finally arrives on campus at Texas. And I think there's at least seven reasons why. Right, in true football fashion, let me give you six for the touchdown, and then we'll throw an extra point in there as well at the end. I'll give you an extra point why. But number one, because clearly, most obviously, he's considered the top recruit at the position really of all time. Matched with Quinn Ewers and Vince Young for the best rating 24/7 Sports has offered for a quarterback recruit since they started over 20 years ago. Number two reason why there's more pressure on Arch than really anybody is because of his family name. Because he is a Manning. Because his grandfather was an NFL quarterback and a pretty darn good one as well. He was just on terrible teams. And then Eli won a couple of Super Bowls, and Peyton won a couple of Super Bowls, and both probably will be Hall of Famers. Peyton, obviously, a Hall of Famer. Eli, because of the Super Bowl success, that'll probably be enough to get him into the Hall of Fame as well. And even his own father, Cooper Manning, was believed to be the most talented of the three, if not for a back injury that ended his career as a wide receiver before he could play in college. And now here comes Arch, right? With all of that, having to live in that shadow, like Michael Jordan's kids who never made it to the professional ranks. We'll see about Bronny James. But it's always tough when you grow up in that shadow and the expectations are that you will, at minimum, be as good as your family members. Problem is, those family members are Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Talk about setting the bar pretty high. Number three reason why there's more pressure on Arch Manning than anybody else that we've seen is because name, image, and likeness. Now, again, I don't know how big of a role this is going to play. But even when Trevor Lawrence went to Clemson, name, image, and likeness wasn't a thing. I imagine Arch is going to be getting a ton of money maybe once he arrives on Texas. He'll have ample opportunities for advertisements, for sponsorships. Everyone, I'm sure, will want to be in business with the Manning family. And then when you have money involved for, say, a 19-year-old kid who's playing in college for the first time, I think that only adds more pressure. When you have more people to please, and maybe they're in your ear, and even maybe more distractions. Look, Arch comes from, we all believe, to be a really good family, and they know what they're doing when it comes to the quarterback position or playing in college or the NFL and having pressure and making a lot of money. So maybe the Manning family will try to curb any sort of name, image, likeness. But even if it plays a small role, it's a role that a lot of quarterbacks in the past did not have to worry about. Now the top quarterbacks do. Number four reason why Arch Manning has more pressure than really anybody else we've seen is because he's expected to be the savior for Texas. When Trevor Lawrence came to Clemson, he had to upkeep the standards. He had to keep up with what Clemson just accomplished with Deshaun Watson. He had to try to get them back to winning another national championship. That is a lot of pressure. And we could have an argument, it'd be a pretty good debate, about what brings more pressure. Trying to fill the shoes of somebody who's already done it or trying to be the first one to do it in a long time. Right, Texas has been down for about 15 years. We've been wondering every year, is Texas finally back? And now the belief is, well, Arch Manning's going to get them back. And he better, right? If he doesn't, it's going to be a knock on Arch Manning. I think because of the expectations of what he's going to mean for Texas, that's the number four reason. Number five reason why there's more pressure on Arch Manning than anybody else that we've seen is because already they've added 9 other recruits since Arch Manning's commitment. Guys want to go play with Arch. So now it's not just about Arch Manning, but it's about these other guys coming to play with him specifically and the amount of talent he's bringing into Texas. So now not only will the roster on paper be a lot better, but also a little bit of a pressure on these kids, on his teammates. They're like, hey, I came here to play with you, and you're really not as good as we thought you'd be. Now, you're not really helping me out. I thought if I was a wide receiver for Arch Manning, I'd become an NFL player. Right, when you're responsible for those other guys coming to come play with you, and they want to come play at Texas just to be with Arch Manning, and reportedly he's doing some recruiting himself and saying, come play with me, you become a little more responsible for those guys. A little more pressure on you. Right? Like if you go out with your kid, it's one thing. You go camping with just your child, all right, that's one thing. But if you're the only adult and you're going camping with 10 other kids, your child and all their friends, and now you're responsible for everyone else, you know, all the other parents' kids as well. You're the only adult out there camping with them. A little more pressure. You're a little more stressed. You got to make sure everybody's safe and they get home all in one piece and everybody's okay. Number six reason is because Texas will be joining the SEC. And so number one, it's the best conference in football. Things are only going to get harder for Texas. But then also the second part to that is because of the Manning family tradition in that conference and the need for Arch to potentially have to live up to Eli or Peyton and what they did in the SEC or even Archie. And then the extra point, the seventh point, why Arch Manning is dealing with more pressure than any other quarterback or recruit we've seen is because maybe Quinn Ewers. What if Quinn Ewers does play really well this year? He's the number one quarterback in his class. And then Arch Manning comes on campus, and it's like, well, Quinn Ewers was just a star here last year. And assuming Arch decides to continue to go to Texas and Quinn Ewers stays there and the two of them are there, now you have a little bit of a battle as well. If Quinn Ewers does not play well this year, if he bottoms out, if he appears to be a bust in his first season, right, then Arch Manning comes in and he's only viewed as even more of a savior. Oh, don't worry, we got Arch Manning coming along. But if Quinn Ewers plays really well this year, and say Texas does win the conference, now Arch comes along, it's like, oh, now I got to beat out this guy too, who looked pretty good in his first true year of playing college football. And if you even also want to say the fact that Texas A&M had the number one recruiting class of all time, that may not help Arch Manning either. The idea that Texas needs to keep up with Texas A&M. And that Texas fans can say, that's fine. You had the number one recruiting class of all time. We got Arch Manning over here. But if Arch doesn't quite pan out how you expect, right, you're putting all your eggs in his basket, that wouldn't be so good either for Texas fans. So really, there's about eight reasons. We could probably come up with more. But eight reasons for why Arch Manning probably has more pressure on him than any other recruit we've ever seen, at least that I can recall in my lifetime. The amount of pressure that's on him because of his status as a recruit, his name, where he's going, what they hope to get out of him, the fact that they'll be joining the SEC, all of these reasons. Now, as I gave you the list yesterday just before we went off the air, if you do look at the top recruited quarterbacks of all time, pretty much they've all panned out in college. Right? Arch Manning is tied with Quinn Ewers and Vince Young. We haven't seen yet Quinn Ewers. We haven't obviously seen Arch Manning yet. Vince Young, though, worked out pretty well. Then the next highest recruited quarterback was Trevor Lawrence. Worked out pretty well in college. Then you get to Justin Fields. Good college career. Brock Berlin, good college career. Didn't really pan out in the NFL. Terrell Pryor, really good college career that was then kind of marred by the autograph scandal. Bryce Young, already won a Heisman. Then you get to Matt Barkley and Jimmy Clausen round out the top 10. And Matt Barkley was a good college quarterback until he came back for his senior year, stayed a little too long, had a disappointing senior year, and dropped in the draft. Slid to the fourth round. But in college, he was pretty good, at least for those first 3 years. And Jimmy Clausen at Notre Dame wasn't great. He was one of those that many thought was overhyped. Didn't quite pan out at Notre Dame. In fact, wasn't he showed up to something in a limo before he even got to Notre Dame? His commitment or some award. He came in on campus like the big man on campus. A lot of people, did, you know, they weren't too fond of Jimmy. I knew people at the school at the time and didn't really like Jimmy Clausen on campus. He was decent. He was okay. But most of those other quarterbacks had pretty good college careers. So when you talk about the best quarterbacks of all time, really none of them were huge misses. None of them were huge busts. Maybe they weren't the best quarterback in football, but they're all pretty good. By the way, speaking of Trevor Lawrence, here was Trevor in a press conference this week talking about Jacksonville. And the first clip is talking about his new coach, Doug Peterson. No longer does he have to worry about the circus that was Urban Meyer. He's got a Super Bowl-winning head coach. And here's Trevor talking about working with Doug Peterson so far this offseason.
It's been great. Just the way he interacts with the team, the way he leads, I think, personality-wise, we're similar. You know, we get along well. Our demeanors are very similar. So I've just enjoyed getting to know him and kind of picking his brain, just seeing how he thinks. And it's been great. Obviously, he played quarterback. He's won a Super Bowl as a player and as a coach. So, you know, he knows how to get there. He knows how to do it. And I think that's really important, having a leader like that. And just the energy he's brought to the building has been awesome. And really building that trust of the team, he's done a great job of.
Trevor Lawrence talking about the new coach, Doug Peterson. Yeah, certainly an upgrade over Urban Meyer. Doug's done it before. He's won a Super Bowl before. He played the position in the NFL. He's developed young quarterbacks. It's a big help for Trevor Lawrence heading into year two. So too could potentially be the return of Travis Etienne, Trevor's former teammate. Here was Trevor talking about Etienne getting back out on the field this year for Jacksonville.
We had some tough injuries last year, and you know, Travis is a guy I've played with now for 3 years in college and been on the same team this past year as well, just to get to play together. And just knowing that dynamic element that he can bring is going to help us a ton, that explosion. And we missed that last year. And then obviously James going down late in the year too really hurt us. So having both those guys back is going to be great for our offense. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm just excited to see everything come together.
Trevor Lawrence talking about Travis Etienne getting back out there. That could help too. They brought in a bunch of wide receivers this offseason. Brought in a couple of linemen, right? I think Jacksonville, look, how much better will they be? I don't know. They were pretty terrible last year. But I do think they are getting better, and they're trying to help their young quarterback. That's the big difference. Chicago really hasn't done much to help their young quarterback. The Bears spent the second least amount of money in the league in support staff for Justin Fields in terms of the roster, in weapons around Justin Fields. They spent the second least amount of money. Not great. The Jaguars, at least they're trying. They're bringing in guys. You get ETN back healthy. You know, they messed around with Urban Meyer. That was not a great move for a rookie quarterback, but now you go get a Super Bowl-winning head coach. I don't know how much better Jacksonville will be with this year, but I do think they're at least trying to make things easier on their young quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, in year two. And he certainly needs to play a lot better because last year he did not look good at all. Coming up, the latest in the whole Freddie Freeman saga. It's not ending. In fact, now we have word about potential lawsuits. It continues. We'll get to that when we come back. The latest in the whole Freddie Freeman agent debacle. The Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine and next is black. So if you want me off your back, well, come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Coming up, the latest in the whole Freddie Freeman ordeal. We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Big trade pulled off in the NBA last night by the Atlanta Hawks. We'll touch on that coming up in a little bit. But elsewhere in Atlanta, or formerly Atlanta, or in the return to Atlanta this past weekend, we still have this Freddie Freeman story that has been lingering on, and it's been interesting to follow. Now, yesterday, Doug Gottlieb, who I do like, I'm a fan of Doug. I think he's really great. I think he's one of the best voices in when it comes to breaking down basketball. He put out this tweet that said Casey Close, who's the agent for Freddie Freeman. I had said Scott Boras earlier this week. It was Casey Close. I was, I guess, misremembering. I remember playing audio a few months ago about free agents. We were playing Scott Boras audio. I don't remember who that was about then. I thought it was for Freddie. I guess not. So anyways, I misremembered from earlier. Casey Close was Freeman's agent from day one until this past weekend. And Casey's a longtime agent. He was Derek Jeter's agent, Jeter's entire career. So before people start, you know, jumping down his throat thinking that Freddie had some bunk representation, he was Jeter's only agent in Jeter's career. He is Clayton Kershaw's agent. He had Ryan Howard. He's been a longtime agent. Played in the minors. Married a former Miss America, by the way. Casey Close. He's doing okay. And had this big deal for Freddie Freeman. Also did Freeman's contract with the Braves, the extension in 2014. And currently is the agent for Dansby Swanson. And I think that's important because Dansby is about to become a free agent. So if Dansby truly feels like something's not on the up and up with his buddy Freddie, right, maybe he would want to make a move here before an important time for his baseball future, especially having a good year so far. And to this point, that has not occurred. But here is Gottlieb's, I guess you would call it a report. I don't know. It was just a tweet. But he tweeted yesterday, Casey Close never told Freddie Freeman about the Braves' final offer. That is why Freeman fired him. He found out in Atlanta this past weekend. It isn't that rare to have this happen in Major League Baseball, but it happened. Close knew Freddie would have taken the Atlanta deal. That was the, if you want to call it a report, that was the tweet from Doug Gottlieb yesterday. And again, I like Doug, so this isn't some sort of, you know, personal thing. I have a hard time buying this as being accurate. That Casey Close never told Freddie Freeman about the Braves' final offer. And that Casey drove Freddie to L.A., theoretically, for the money? I find it hard to believe. Now, Doug's the only one with this report, so that's part of it, too. Right? They always say, like, you get a second source or you get somebody else to back it up. Once a second person reports it, okay, then maybe it's more likely. But when only one person has the story, maybe that's just what they were told. Maybe they got wrong information. Maybe that's what they believe. Who knows? But also, this would go against everything that the agent is supposed to do. This would not only be enough for Freddie Freeman to fire his agent, Casey Close, but this would be enough to take him to almost court or like a hearing with the Major League Baseball PA. This would be enough for Casey Close to lose his ability to represent anybody else in Major League Baseball. And I don't think a longtime agent would do that. Because as the agent, Casey Close has what they call an obligation. It's not the exact term, but an obligation to present the offer. You have to do what's in the best interest of your client, your player. And if you kept that information from Freddie Freeman, as Doug is suggesting, that's, again, enough that not only would you lose that client, Freddie fired him, but the Major League Baseball PA can make a decision that, hey, this guy can't represent us, any of our players moving forward. He could be barred from Major League Baseball. And there are remedies available for Freddie Freeman if he would pursue them or not. There are things in place that can be done because of this idea, the suggestion. So anyways, long story short, I don't buy this report, this tweet, this idea that Casey Close left or kept this information away from Freddie Freeman. He just wouldn't do it. He's been an agent for a long time. He's smart enough to know it's not something that you can do, and it wouldn't be worth it. It wouldn't be worth it to then not only lose that client, that's fine. He doesn't care if he lost Freddie Freeman. He already got his 5%. But it wouldn't be worth it to lose your ability, almost your license in Major League Baseball, to represent any other players. It wouldn't be done. Now, Casey Close did respond, the agent who's been fired. He did respond, and his statement said, Doug Gottlieb tweeted a wholly inaccurate characterization of our negotiations with the Atlanta Braves on behalf of Freddie Freeman. We are immediately evaluating all legal options to address the reckless publication of inaccurate information. That's the statement from Casey Close, coming in strong. We'll see if he actually does anything legally. If you want to talk about, Gottlieb slandering his name. He also said there is no truth whatsoever to what Doug Gottlieb recklessly tweeted, and I would testify to that under oath, is what Casey Close said, the agent, in response. Yeah, I just find the whole thing hard to believe, that Casey Close would keep information away from Freddie, would essentially push him in a certain direction to L.A., thinking that either that's the best thing for him or it's a chance to make more money because L.A. was offering more money. I find that hard to believe. Freeman said he had learned a lot about what went on between Braves management and his agents during an offseason fractured by MLB's lockout. But he also said that he had a three-hour FaceTime conversation with Alex Anthopoulos, the GM of the Braves, the week after signing with the Dodgers. That gave him a better understanding of why things played out the way they did. So as Gottlieb was saying, Freeman found out this past weekend some information. According to this original report, Freeman FaceTime with Alex Anthopoulos a week after all this drama went down and learned some new information then. But I would imagine in a three-hour conversation with your former GM, that would probably come up. And Anthopoulos said, hey, we came to you never heard about our final offer? We came to your agent. He didn't tell you about it? I think over the course of a three-hour conversation, going through the play-by-play, that would be mentioned. Freeman did say Tuesday, I've been gathering information. I've learned a lot because I've talked to the other side. You know, maybe the Braves did say something. Maybe somebody told him something over the weekend. He did fire his agent on Sunday. We got news of it, got wind of it on Tuesday. But he made the move on Sunday, getting rid of Casey Close. I just find that idea hard to believe that Casey was intentionally keeping information away from his client because that goes against the rules, the regulations. And that's enough to cost you your opportunity to work with Major League Baseball. And to my knowledge, I think all of Casey Close's clients are in Major League Baseball. That's a death wish. You would lose your career. You would lose your clients. I don't think he's doing that, keeping that information from Freddie. And he also already knew that Freddie told him, you know, he wanted to be in Atlanta, from what we've been told, what has been reported. So it also would not be acting in the best interest of your client either. With all that said, I do think a lot of this is just trying to, you know, pass the buck off. Freddie had the opportunity. Atlanta offered him. We had the audio from Chipper Jones. Chipper warned Freddie Freeman that this is exactly how things would play out. And what do you know? A guy who's been through it before warned Freddie, and he was exactly right. This is how things played out. When Freddie turned down the initial offer from Atlanta for 5 years, $135 million, Chipper Jones warned him, right? You're playing a dangerous game. So I still fault Freddie more than anybody. You had the initial opportunity to sign that deal with Atlanta. You still didn't do it. And if Freddie did hire an agent who doesn't know what he's doing, I still hold Freddie responsible. He's working for you. And if Freddie is so close to the Braves, why didn't he have any conversations with Alex Anthopoulos throughout the whole process to try to figure this whole thing out? So I think a lot of this is trying to pass the responsibility off to the agent. Maybe the agent didn't do his best job, but I don't think he did as bad of a job as some people are trying to set him up to appear. And I don't think he did something that would strip him from all of his clients in Major League Baseball. I don't think he's that dumb to get a couple extra million dollars. it'd be smarter to then keep all of his clients and get money from them moving forward and keep his career. I don't believe that report from Doug Gottlieb yesterday. I don't think that's true. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. I have a few more thoughts on this, on why this may actually be the best thing for Olsen. And also, Clayton Kershaw made some comments about Freddie Freeman. We'll get to that. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Anthony works in the grocery store, saving his pennies for someday. Mama Leone left a note on the door. She said, Sonny, move out to the country. Oh, but working too hard can give you a heart attack. You want to know by now.
Wrapping up hour one of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We were talking about Freddie Freeman last segment. Doug Gottlieb had a tweet yesterday. He, of course, if you're not familiar, works for Fox Sports, has his own radio show over there, covers basketball. But he had tweeted out this idea that Casey Close did not disclose all the information of Freddie Freeman in the offseason negotiations and was doing his job as the agent to kind of direct Freddie Freeman to L.A. Theoretically, I would assume, because L.A. was offering more money, and then as an agent, you'd get more money. I guess that'd be my thought. Or maybe he thought he was doing the best thing for his client, even though I'm sure Freddie made it clear that he would like to return to Atlanta. Although that's what we're led to believe, but we also know how important it was for Freddie to try to get that 6 year, which is why he didn't sign with Atlanta in the first place. And also why I can't absolve Freddie of all responsibility in this. I thought Ken Rosenthal put it pretty well in The Athletic this morning when he said, who was running the show here anyway? Freeman doesn't work for XL. The agency works for him. And it's Freeman's fault more than anyone else's if he did not end up exactly where he wanted. And I think that's a good point. Now, with all that said, maybe this was all the best thing for Matt Olson, what has happened over the past week here at Freddie Freeman. We'll get to that coming up. Plus, the Atlanta Hawks made a big trade last night. We'll get to that as well. Plenty more to do throughout this Thursday. Hour 2 coming up next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.